welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. Inside Education is your weekly opportunity for professional development on a range of topics related to teaching and learning. You can listen to or download over 350 previous episodes of Inside Education from the last 10 years by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. On last week's programme, I brought you the first part of my interview with Dr. Tara Concannon-Gibney from Dublin City University. The reason I spoke to Tara was to mark the publication of her new book on literacy titled Teaching Essential Literacy Skills in the Early Years Classroom, a Guide for Students and Teachers. Tara Concannon-Gibney is a former primary school teacher who has worked with pre-service and in-service teachers in Ireland and in New York for over a decade. Last week on the programme, Tara spoke about the essential literacy skills that children need to develop in the early years and how they might do so. At the start of this week's programme, we took a step backwards while Tara explained how she defines literacy.
It's a tricky one, really. I suppose if somebody is literate, it's not just about having the nuts and bolts of literacy. It's about perceiving oneself as a reader and as a writer, as someone who feels that they can do it, who enjoys it and wants to do more of it, and then they have those skills to actually do that. So it's that balance between having the skills and strategies, but also having that motivation, that engagement, and that understanding that I can do this and I'm interested in it and I want to keep doing it. And I think if the scale isn't balanced, you find that you have children who will read because they are told to do so in school, but might not necessarily continue to do it after the class is over and that kind of thing. And really, that, like, our goal in teaching literacy is to have lifelong readers, children who leave our classroom and go off and read and write and enjoy it for the rest of their lives. So literacy and being literate has to have those two elements, I think, to be successful.
And with technology and, say, other changes, iPads and phones and things like that, you know, children are seeing more images and they're engaging with technology more. Is that changing what we mean by literacy and how we understand it?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when I'm talking the first chapter here, I talk about, you know, that, yes, I'm talking about big books and things like that, but also there's a lots of scope there for digital texts and using digital texts in lieu of that. And likewise, I mean, in a guided reading session, you could be using digital texts as well. I mean, we have to be kind of mindful that that is the world that they live in. And, you know, I suppose being able to be to navigate these texts is something that is coming down the line quite forcibly. You know, we can't avoid it. So yeah, it is. It does have a role to play at every stage of literacy learning. I suppose we have to be careful as well that we don't over rely on digital texts, because to some extent early childhood is about freedom and exploration and, you know, things like play. We want to make sure that we don't hamper play by introducing them, that they maybe are used, you know, instead of a pen and paper, that they have an iPad and, you know, a writing implement, and that's how they write their sign. You know, that we would include it in meaningful ways as opposed to kind of taking over from something magical that could happen in lieu of that. That we're careful about how we use it, I suppose, is my thinking on it.
And why do some children find it more difficult than others to develop literacy skills?
You know, there's various different reasons. I mean, a lot of it, in a way, like the experiences that children bring from home to school obviously have a huge part to play. Some children are being read to from birth. They've lots of books in the home. They're talked to a lot. There's lots of vocabulary. You know, socioeconomic status has a lot to do with that. Children who have, you know, are speaking various different languages at home, you know, that might impact it culturally. Sometimes more texts and books and talk is more the norm. So there's a lot of different reasons why children come in with different experiences. And, you know, there's not necessarily a level playing field when they arrive. In terms of literacy difficulties, I mean, one of the main kind of issues around difficulty in becoming literate would be around phonological awareness, actually, and the phonological core deficit that exists for a lot of children who find that difficult to read, and that they find it, for whatever reason, difficult to connect those sounds in their head. And for those children, the phonological awareness piece is very important. You know, other children might have visual processing difficulties, so they don't tend to see things as another child might see them, and that can cause difficulties. Other children, it's maybe attention deficit issues, that they can't focus, they can't pay attention for long enough to take all that stuff in. And so that can, you know, there's such a wide range of reasons. I mean, I think for a teacher, it's about, you know, making sure that your teaching is high quality, and then paying close attention to the children in the class and seeing what's going on, and, you know, documenting the day-to-day progress to see if you can identify if there's issues there, and then, you know, finding examples of them so that you can, you know, talk about them in a meaningful way, and see what can be done about it. But I suppose it's not a straightforward question or answer.
Yeah, and some of the things you said there, some you can do something about them, and some might be more difficult to do something about. But say, if you were talking to a parent of a preschool child before the child comes to formal schooling, what kind of things can the parent do to help the child at home?
Sure. Well, I suppose the number one thing is reading books, storybooks. You can never get enough storybooks. And then, you know, even in choosing storybooks, thinking about the books that you're reading, you know, some storybooks are better than others. Some of them can be, I suppose, the ones that are to do with commercial TV programmes, for example, tend to be very difficult in terms of trying to comprehend the storyline, I find. The traditional tales, the Three Little Pigs, those ones are actually probably the best choice if you're trying to pick a storybook, to be honest, because they're very straightforward. They've got a very specific story narrative, easy for the children to be able to talk about and retell. So lots of storybook reading, and then talking about the books, talking about the words, talking about the pictures, talking about the storyline, and having a chat about it. Singing songs and rhymes, you know, if they've learned songs and rhymes in preschool, to encourage them to sing it at home. You know, that's kind of your phonological awareness happening very easily in the home. And then just talking about everything, I suppose, talking over dinner, talking while you ride in the car, talking about what's on the television, if you're watching television, lots and lots of talk, and, you know, naming things, increasing the vocabulary, you know, and it's easy for us to do, but also easy for us to forget to do, you know, that if we're chatting to the child, or if you're sitting side by side, to try and verbalise what you're doing so that they can hear more vocabulary, or encourage them to talk about what they're doing and things like that. And usually young children find it a lot easier to talk about something that is in front of them, rather than tell me about your day in preschool, is actually very challenging unless you have some sort of visual that they can draw on. So I wouldn't be too worried if they can't tell you about their day in preschool. But, you know, sometimes, you know, things like photographs or books or some sort of artifact or a picture or something like that can help you have that conversation.
And when the child starts going to school then, and they start reading actual text, and if they bring it home to the parent and the child is reading text, they come to a word they don't know, how should the parent react at that stage?
It would depend on the word. So if it's a word that's decodable, then we can use our phonics. So if they come to a word and it's dog, you know, if we know our letter sounds, we can go dog, dog. If we come to a word like said, the phonics isn't going to work, basically. It's a word that you need to know off by heart. It's a high frequency word. So, you know, the child might need a little bit of assistance with that word. And maybe, you know, if I know, say, a child in my class who had difficulty picking up the high frequency words, maybe we could create a little game or something like that, a little matching game or something, to give them a little bit of extra practice on it. And then there are some words, I mean, usually it depends. We don't want to sound out words that don't sound out. And we don't want to, we want to use our phonics when we can. Sometimes, depending on the text that they're reading, they can use their knowledge of picture and context, and they'll actually, that's how they'll read the word. And I mean, we can get even more complicated to think about morphology and the word parts, you know, say like ed endings or ing endings, that we break up the word and say looking, that we know look and now we have ing, and we put those together. It actually is very complicated. To be honest, I would feel that for a parent who's having a child maybe who has a little bit of difficulty with literacy, that this book would actually be quite useful as well, because it explains all of those things in a fairly accessible manner. Because I often think parents want to help, but it's more complex than one would think. There are different ways of looking at, just because they can't get a word, there could be so many different reasons for them not knowing that word, or if they read the word incorrectly, sometimes the error tells us more about the child as a reader, you know, that they used context or that they were over relying on phonics or that they don't see those word endings. And that actually is useful for instruction when we're going to plan lessons. But a parent is probably just not sure what to do. So it would be useful from that point of view, I think, as well, if a parent had a child who was struggling a little bit and wanted to kind of do a little bit of help at home.
You've already mentioned that you would avoid texts, say, that are related to maybe popular characters on TV programmes and things like that, and you would choose traditional stories. But say for a parent or for an aunt or an uncle or a friend, a neighbour who wants to buy a book for a child, what other advice would you give them? Or is there any, you know, any particular approach they should use when choosing a book that that will be good for the child?
Well, you know, there's loads of wonderful children authors that are outside of traditional tales. I suppose the most important thing is that if you read the book and if the book has an accessible storyline, you know, like a storyline that you can actually follow, and it has maybe a few of those tier two words that I was talking about, you know, that vocabulary that's a little bit of a challenge, but there's maybe a few of those in the book. So we learn a few new vocabulary words. Maybe there's an interesting character. There's a storyline that you could actually follow, you know, and maybe nice illustrations. You know, somebody like Oliver Jeffers, I mean, is always a big hit with children. Or Hervé Toulé is a French author that has really fun books for children. I have two little young sons myself, so I'm fairly used to reading those ones on a regular basis. The reason I would say not with the popular characters is I do have some of those in my house and I find it hard to understand the storyline. And I'm an adult because they try and recreate one of the episodes in a book. And so oftentimes children are drawn to it because they see it, oh, that's Paw Patrol or whatever. But it's not always the best choice as a storybook. So sometimes maybe you get a balance. You have some of those in the house, but you also have some of the other ones that will actually be more beneficial to the child. Or any book that has a lovely kind of repetitive phrases or rhyming words in it. You know, Julia Donaldson, children love her books. There's loads of great vocabulary. Lots of rhyme and alliteration and fun storylines and great illustrations. So, I mean, they're always popular as well and you can't go wrong. I would say as well, when you're reading stories to the child, it's not about having hundreds of books sometimes. You'll find that children want the same book over and over again. And actually, that's a good thing because that's how they get learn those language chunks and the vocabulary. And that's how they get a sense of narrative and things like that. So actually, it's good. Repetitive reading, and that's one of the reasons why in shared reading we read the same book over the week, because that familiarity is developed and the children then can talk deeper about the storyline. So if you're reading the same book for the 57th time, it's not a bad thing, I suppose.
That's good to know. You've also written quite a bit in the book about poetry. How do you see the role of poetry in developing literacy skills?
Well, I'm a big fan of poetry, mainly because I think it kind of has untapped potential. I think sometimes it's a little bit forgotten. They call it the neglected genre. And yet it's so fun and children tend to love it. So I'm not sure why we're always so afraid of it. In the early years, I mean, there's so many great poems and rhymes. I mean, in an early years classroom, you should have a poem and rhyme about everything. I mean, you should have a poem and rhyme about getting in the morning, eating your lunch, going home, tidying up, starting shared reading, maths rhymes, rhymes for geography, rhymes for history. There should be rhymes and songs and poems for everything, because that's children learn it. They learn the language chunks, they learn the vocabulary, and it's fun, you know. And they learn about the syntax of language and how language sounds. So you could just never have enough of them, if you ask me. You know, as children progress into reading, I've often found that poetry is a very accessible genre, particularly for like English language learners. Again, because they're shorter, they take up less space on the page, they're not as intimidating, and you can pretty much find a poem about any theme under the sun. So if you're working with children who are football mad, for example, finding a fun poem about football is not as difficult as it is to find a book about football, perhaps. So it's very accessible and easy to do, and you know, you can actually do a lot of comprehension work around poetry as well, because poetry by their nature are very descriptive. They're not always very explicit. Sometimes we have to infer meaning and that kind of thing. So that's really useful from a comprehension point of view. It usually invokes lots of discussion, talking about the poem, you know, lots of fun there. So we get oral language development, comprehension, because of the use of, say, punctuation and expression, lots of fluency work is possible as well. So there's you can pretty much teach everything with a poem, but yet it's short and sweet and fun and accessible. You know, you can find sight words in a poem. You can find your phonics, say you're teaching letter P. You can find your letters in the poem. There's a lot of possibilities there. So I kind of feel that we probably need to do more poetry.
And how would you see the teacher using the poetry? Would it be learning it off in class? Would it be reading them? Or would it be, you know, just listening to them?
It really depends. I mean, a lot of them, they'll learn as part of, say, routines or as part of lessons. And I mean, like short, sweet, snappy ones. I mean, we're talking about early years here. They're not going to be long tomes. Ones with actions really help, particularly if language is an issue, because it helps us to learn what we're actually doing and maybe the use of visuals. So a lot of them we'll learn them. But if I'm going to use it as a teaching text, say in lieu of shared reading, I would then have it maybe on a piece of chart paper, and then we'll use it and we'll talk about, say, our sight words, we'll find our letter sounds. You know, we'll use it like that as a text, a large format text. So I do give some examples of that in the book. If you want, I suppose, that bit of diversity, that it's not always storybooks that we're reading, that we have some opportunities to do other types of text like poetry. And it's such a cheap resource. I mean, all you need is a piece of chart paper and a marker and you can write your poem up and there you go. Whereas buying a big book is a bit more expensive. So it's cheap, but it's also very effective. And I find that the kids usually respond very, very well to it. And it has lots of possibilities, not just the early years, I suppose, but, you know, it's particularly useful as an alternative to a shared reading text.
How did you get interested in the whole area of literacy, Tara?
I conducted a self-study of my own teaching practices last semester and into this semester. And one thing I realised is that I've always been into literacy. I used to play library as a child. But I suppose that comes from being in a home that was surrounded by books and that had an emphasis on education, and reading and writing were just norms. And I used to write poetry as a child and things like that. And I'd kind of forgotten all about that until when I started reflecting on it in the last year, and I realised, you know, that these things do come from somewhere, I suppose. So those influences, you know, really made an effect on me. And when I went and I did my B.Ed., I suppose it was always that subject area that really interested me. And when I was told about new methodologies, I couldn't wait to try them out in my classroom. And, you know, I got such good feedback from the parents. So things like, say, Writer's Workshop, which I have a chapter on the book, I tried that out in the first class that I ever taught. And I probably didn't do a great job of it as an IQD, but I did it with a lot of enthusiasm. And I had wonderful letters from parents at the end of the year saying how wonderful it was that their children had such opportunities to learn how to write in a meaningful way. And that it had been, you know, one parent even said it was almost life changing for her child. So it really encouraged me then to think, wow, I mean, I really should do more of this. And that kind of led me down the road to doing a master's in literacy. And then obviously my PhD was based in literacy as well. And now I teach literacy all day long. So, you know, I suppose I see it as so important and so, like, essential in our lives in so many different ways. You know, you need it to access every subject area, really, to some extent. And also it has such benefits, even like, you know, there's a lot of studies these days around mental health and the benefits that reading can give us from a mental health point of view, that I suppose I feel like it's such an important and essential and wonderful subject area that actually writing this book, I wouldn't say it was so much a joy, because at times it was a bit onerous, but it came very easily to me. I was excited to share my practice and I hope that other people will read it and find it interesting and be able to take bits out of it and adapt it to their context and hopefully have the kind of very enjoyable experiences that I had in my classroom. I mean, for me, it's just as important. I mean, it's important that the children enjoy literacy, but it's also important for the teacher to enjoy that teaching and those methodologies and to bring it alive for themselves as well as the students. And I think it's kind of infectious when it gets like that. So that's kind of my hope, that maybe people will read it and find something in there that kind of helps them transform their practice or just gives a different kind of, maybe a different kind of way of coming at it that kind of makes a difference for them in some way, maybe in some small way, who knows. But hopefully people will find it helpful.
And how did you go about writing the book?
Well, you know, it's based a lot on, I mean, I teach modules on literacy and have done for many years. So I kind of was, when I was writing and I was thinking about all the things that I usually try and impart on a literacy module. I've also done a lot of summer courses with teachers, in-service teachers, as well as my pre-service teachers. So I was thinking, well, you know, from an early years standpoint, what does a teacher need to know to be able to create literacy blocks where children become readers and writers? And then kind of dividing that up and then trying to kind of put a shape in every chapter to make it, I suppose, easy to follow and accessible. And then I do have I put in chapters then around planning and the reality of the situation to make it kind of, I suppose, seem doable. I didn't want it to be too theoretical. I mean, it is research based and I do make lots of references to the literature. But at the end of the day, the practical bit is very important. So trying to get that nice balance together. And then I was very lucky. I was a beneficiary of a DCU grant for photographs, which really, I think, helped bring it alive a little bit more that people can see images, I think, can really help to paint the picture together. And then I've tried to put in kind of reflective pieces and guiding questions so that somebody could use it as a self-study guide. You know, I suppose that'd be the way I would learn myself, and so I kind of modelled it on that, basically.
We're coming near the end, Tara, so I have a few general questions now that I often ask guests on the programme. So the first one is there a teacher who had a significant impact on you?
It's hard to tell. I have reflected on this recently, and it wasn't so much any of the teachers I had in primary or secondary school. I think it was more my home environment, that I had a home environment that valued books and reading, and I was encouraged to do that sort of thing. You know, I suppose when I came here as a B.Ed, Etten Kennedy, who's my head of school, she taught me on the B.Ed, and she was the one who introduced me to writer's workshop and things like that. So I suppose she would have had an influence on my practice as a teacher. But I suppose really it was my home that kind of, my parents that kind of gave me that gift, which I'm very, very happy to have received, because they definitely influenced my kind of outlook on literacy and that kind of thing.
Who or what inspires you?
I suppose when I was a teacher, the children I taught inspired me. I mean, they amazed me with their ability to do things, you know, every day. You know, they would come in, particularly when I taught infants, that they would come in September, and then that growth that you would see over the course of a year, or sometimes I took them for a 2 year into juniors, into seniors. It was just amazing to see children blossom and grow and develop as readers and writers. It's just amazing. And I suppose I have two young sons now, so seeing them grow as readers and writers, and from a parent's perspective, is kind of inspiring as well, that they can learn so much in so little time. It's amazing. I mean, if adults had that capacity, we'd be very lucky. But no, the ability for children to actually just to learn and to make things their own and kind of adapt it for their purposes is really fascinating. So yeah, they really have inspired me over the years.
Have you a favourite book or blog or writer about education?
Gosh, it would depend. It varies a lot. Who do I love? Mem Fox. I read her memoir recently, which is fabulous. It's called Dear Mem Fox, I Liked All Your Books, Even Your Pathetic Ones, which is a fabulous title. But I was really inspired by her because she talks about not only the power of reading aloud and children's literature and children's lives, but she also talks about her role as a teacher of teachers, which I'm kind of fascinated with as well. So she's kind of very, I've always found her very inspirational. And I've also found Georgia Heard, who's a poet and an author who writes a lot of books around teaching poetry. You know, her stuff I've always been very fond of as well. So yeah, they'd be kind of two that I would think of straight away. There's probably a whole long list, you know, like I suppose books that I read many years ago when I was a B.Ed and an M.Ed, like Lucy Calkins. They still kind of resonate with me. I still remember those things, the lessons that I learned from those books. So they were kind of, you know, in some ways touchstone texts for me as an educator and as a teacher, just because they were written in a very narrative style that you kind of felt like you were part of their story. And I suppose in a way that's why I put so many classroom vignettes in my book, because I wanted to be able to tell the story as well as, you know, just giving, I suppose, bullet points, for example.
Are those vignettes from your own teaching?
Yeah, they are. I didn't put my own name in all of them, obviously, but they are all based on my own classroom. And the last chapter is really an extended vignette of practice, just because I think sometimes we just like to visualise a classroom in our minds. And I suppose somebody like Lucy Calkins, her book is exactly like that. You imagine that you're actually there, which is why I think it impacted me so much as a teacher. So yeah, I suppose I try to emulate her somewhat in that kind of way.
Do you have plans for another book?
Well, my sons asked me when, as soon as this one was finished, they asked me when the next one was going to happen. You know, probably. At the moment, I'm kind of, I suppose, at a juncture where we'll finish this one fully first. But absolutely, I mean, actually, I love writing. And I actually enjoyed doing it. It's just finding the time sometimes that can be a little challenging to do. Yeah, so, but yeah, ideally it would be lovely to do one maybe around focusing more on children's literature specifically and looking at all the different ways of using children's literature in the classroom. And might kind of have that as a central focus and across all age groups as opposed to maybe early years. I'm not sure. It's still a little bit in process, but yeah, it would be lovely to do something else.
And that will be a book to look forward to in the future from Dr. Tara Concannon-Gibney from Dublin City University. We spoke on this occasion to mark the publication of her new book on literacy, Teaching Essential Literacy Skills in the Early Years Classroom, and it's published by Routledge. That brings this week's Inside Education to a close. If you want to listen back to this or any of the hundreds of previous episodes of Inside Education, you can go to seandelaney.com and click on the podcasts tab. My own book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from online bookstores or on request from your local library. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.